Well, take your Bibles and turn to 1 Corinthians 6, verses 1 through 7 is where we are. I don't know if you enjoy old country western music. And that even might not even be the right genre. But Sioux City Sioux is a song that was played by Gene Autry. I was going to play it for you, but it's disappeared from my phone. So in the absence of being able to do that easily, I'm going to forego it. But Sioux City Sioux is for a Indian tribe, S-I-O-U-X, Sioux City. And Sue is the name of the girl. And if you want to have fun music, I've actually got this on CD. But it's an old song. But it's a good name for what we're working with in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, because we live in Sioux City. Everybody wants to sue everybody else. Since Trump became president, we are no longer governed by constitutional rule. We're governed by lawsuits. Everything that he tried to do, the opposing political party brought lawsuits to prevent it. So it tied everything up into lawsuits. And now we're trying to take playbooks, take that same play out of the playbooks and use it to protect us from the things that our current president is wanting to impose upon us. So we're no longer governing by law, we're governing by courts. It's the lawsuits that are determining how things are going to go, whether it's mandates or gender fluidity or whatever. It's not logic, it's not common sense, it's not law, it's not constitution. It's left to the interpretation of the courts. But we live in a litigious society. As a corporation, we pay $1,000 a year as a retainer to have legal counsel available. Why? Because it's open season on churches and schools now, year-round, not even when school is in session. It's a society that is fraught with lawsuits. Sarah and I were traveling up to an ACTS conference in Missouri. I think Sioux City is actually in Iowa, but we were headed up to Missouri and stopped at a Cracker Barrel along the way. And our inexperienced waiter came along and he dumped his full tray of food on our table. He had too much stuff on it. And I got hit with a hot bowl of something. I don't even remember what I ordered, but it was hot. And it landed on my lap, and I was sitting on the side, and I scooted my chair back, and it just barely touched the lady behind me. And it turns out that lady is from the church in Wichita, Kansas, where they were picketing the funerals of veterans, that insane, crazy church up there. And she wanted me to join her in a lawsuit immediately. She's going to have a lawsuit. I wouldn't even talk to her. I wouldn't even keep my distance from her. And she goes over and starts trying to get Sarah to join in. You know, Sarah, don't talk to this lady, you know. And she did. She sued. And so I became an advocate for Cracker Barrel. Let's let her take this to court. And she'll lose, because I was there and I know what happened. But wouldn't you know it, rather than go through the process of litigation and showing what she's doing, Cracker Barrel settled with them, because it's just a whole lot easier. So I was, they shouldn't have done that. That's the wrong thing to do. But her first reaction is, oh man, we can make money off of this. There's thousands of dollars to be made. And she headed off to the hospital. Absolute looking for nothing but money. Sioux City Sioux. That should be her name. Our litigious society takes everybody to court. And so when we come to 1 Corinthians 6, Paul is dumbfounded at what he finds in the Corinthian church. So my first point is, how dare you? oh, what's the name of that Norwegian girl? How dare you? All right, Greta Thunberg. You know what I'm talking about, Greta Thunberg? How dare you? Yeah, it's probably more memes on that than you can imagine. But actually, this is what it says here in verse 1. To have boldness or daring. Someone of you, he is daring. It's singular, but there's someone in that church that has the gall, has the boldness, that having a matter or a concern against the other, to be being judged before the unrighteous persons and not before the righteous persons. So my first point is from verse 1. How dare you sue a fellow Christian? That's his point. So there's somebody there that is taking a matter. It doesn't even say what the matter is. Taking this issue to court before Paul calls them unrighteous persons and not before the righteous persons. So he's incensed that somebody in the church would actually sue somebody else in the church. Now, I remember when I first came here as a pastor, one fellow who was a builder, he hadn't been paid by another fellow in the church for materials. And so he actually brought it to the church to get resolved. And I don't even remember the resolution of the situation. I think conversations were made that, no, you have to pay this person. We had another situation that came up where a girl had used the mechanic services of one of our church members who was a mechanic and never paid that off. And so we had a conversation with her. You've got to pay your debt. So, you know, those kinds of things come up in the life of a church. It's expected. But what's not expected is that you would go to the pagans to have this resolved. Now, there are two reasons why you should never sue another Christian. And I know I'm going to raise lots of questions here. Well, what if we're not in the same church? What if it's a criminal matter? Okay, so if it's a criminal matter, call the police. What if they're in the church? Call the police. Okay, we're not talking about criminal issues here. We're talking about financial issues. What if the Christian's in another church? Well, this passage will give you some ideas on how to handle it, but the genre in Paul's thinking actually is two people in the same church. So that's what I'm speaking to, okay? So there's two reasons why you don't go to court against a fellow church member. First is that he says you're going to be a judge. So don't you know that the saints of this world, the saints will judge the world, excuse me. Don't you know that the saints will judge the world? And if the world by you is being judged or will be judged, it's the same tense. It could be future, it could be present. Are you so unqualified to judge the least of matters? So the question is, when will believers or saints judge the world? Well, this is just part of Christ's eschatology. You know, when the disciples say, hey man, can I sit on the throne next to you? And in the process that, he just rolls off, look, you guys are going to be sitting on 12 thrones judging the 12 tribes of Israel. All right? So he assumes in his eschatology that believers who are faithful in their service to the Lord, so this is a reward passage, that believers will in the millennium judge the world. So I've got dibs on Bug Tussle, Texas, if the Lord would be so gracious. So you will be rulers and judge, living and reigning with Christ for 1,000 years. And one of the things that you have to do is exercise judgeship. The second reason, this is all under point two reasons why you should not sue. The second reason is that you'll judge angels. Look at the next verse, verse 3. Don't you know, same phrase. So it seems to me that Paul taught these things when he was with people, but then never bothered to incorporate that into his eschatology, like Romans. I don't find anything in his main doctrinal epistles where he frames his theology, but eschatological issues were his third main doctrine that he taught. So it seems to me that he probably taught them a lot that's not found in our scriptures except incidentally. We wouldn't know this other than this passage. So don't you know? So they're supposed to know this already, that they're going to judge the world. And don't you know that angels we will judge? Even more so, everyday life issues. So when will we judge the angels? Well, I don't know. My guess is at some point prior to or after the Great White Throne Judgment. We know that Christ in John 16:11 said the Spirit's convincing the world of sin, righteousness, and judgment on judgment. Of judgment because the prince of this world has already been judged. The judgment has been determined by the resurrection of Christ, and the Spirit is convincing people of that. But the sentence hasn't been carried out. So, you know, when is Satan finally cast into the lake of fire? Well, we know the false prophet and the Antichrist, they're cast into the lake of fire at the end of the tribulation, and a thousand years later, they're still there. So presumably, at some point after the conclusion of this universe and all of this plays out, then the sentencing on demons is going to be wrought. So when I say demons, he doesn't say demons or angels, he just says angels. But it's not uncommon in Scripture to refer to demons as angels. We, in our nomenclature, talk about holy angels, and we talk about fallen angels, but we call them angels. They're messengers. Will we be judging holy angels? I don't think so. And again, this is the only passage we have to go on. But why would they need judging? You know, for reward? Well, they pretty much all do exactly what they're supposed to do. They're ministering spirits. They're doing what God says to do. So I'm thinking that the only ones that need degrees of punishment would be demons. But I don't know. But you shouldn't take somebody to court because you're going to be a judge. You're going to rule over this world. And you're also going to make judicial decisions over demons. And why would God do that? Why would God have you act as a judge? Well, the answer, I think, has to do with God's desire to give you experience in all sorts of different venues. And I like to watch court programs. You know, I used to like to watch Judge Judy, but now I don't watch her anymore. She's got this new program that isn't... She's getting way too old and doing some wonky stuff. She's always been a liberal Jew, but she makes good decisions. But I like to watch Hot Bench. It's a three-panel judge, and they hear cases, and the court limits $4,000. And they weigh this evidence. Then the three of them go back, and they hash it out. And then one of them comes out and I don't know, they don't tell us how they decide who gets the short stick. But one of them comes out and acts as a judge. So in the exchange of information, they're really judging, but they're not judging. They're inquiring. They're giving lines of question. They're reasoning. And they're gathering evidence. And then they take that evidence back and they hash it out. No, this person's lying because of this and this. No, that person's lying. But then one of them comes out and acts as a judge. And he or she, there's one guy and two women, they take the stance of a judge. This court finds you to have lied. And you are found guilty of lying. So your case is dismissed. This court finds that you are lying, so your court is dismissed. Have a good day, boom. So note both of them go away, because neither one of them made their case. But that stance of a judge is something God wants you to experience. Why? Well, because he's the judge of the whole earth, and he wants you to experience that with him. So now is not the time to be going to pagans for lawsuits. Now is the time to be sorting stuff out. Notice how he says the last word in verse 3. Am I in verse 3? I think I am. In verse 3, he says, even more so, everyday life, the stuff that goes on in the warp and woof of the local church. So, one, how dare you sue a fellow believer? Two, there's two reasons why you shouldn't sue. Three, this is kind of fun. Look up here for a minute. The third reason is that the absolute dumbest, worst, unwise believer is better than the pagans. So, this is like saying, little Marvin would do a better job coming to a decision than the pagans. That's his argument. Okay, now obviously we're not going to depend on children. There was some president we had who consulted with his daughter. Maybe that, who was that? Clinton? No, somebody. Carter. He consulted with his daughter. We all like, oh, you're kidding, What are you going to a six-year-old for? But the idea that anywhere you throw the dart in a congregation of Christians, they're going to be better off making a decision than the pagans. Let's look at this. This is verses 4 through 6. Therefore, indeed, truly, you should be having judgments on everyday life. Now, in Greek, he takes the everyday life, which is the object of this, and he moves it all the way to the front of the sentence for emphasis. So, in everyday life, you should be absolutely having judgments. The ones having been despised, this participle here means they're regarded as contemptible in the church. Seat these as judges, an imperative. So he says, an everyday matter, take whoever is regarded as contemptible, despised. That person, put them as a judge. Seat these as your judge. Why? Well, because they'll do a better job than the pagans. Verse 5. To your shame I am speaking. Again, how dare you? Shame on you. I am speaking. Thus, is there not among you a wise person? Not even one who will be able to thoroughly judge between his brother and the other brother? Verse 6. But brother with brother are being judged, and that before unbelievers? How can you do this? You're better off. The worst believer is better than the unbelievers. Look, when we talk about politics, we have lived in this country for decades with quasi-Christian leaders and a quasi-Christian rule of life, all right? That's not the case. We are far closer now to the New Testament. The passage Michael was teaching last week, very clear passage that the unbelievers are a horrible bunch of people, and these are the people we are to be in submission to. These are the rulers. This is what they were like, and you were like them one time, but then you became a believer. So, that's the world in which we live. And as I watch judges, these county commissioners, Collin County, we got a great one. Chris Hills, he's on top of things. But you go to another county, and you have whole different set of standards. Okay? Verse 7. Here's what he wants you to do. Take the loss. Verse 7. Therefore, indeed, already an utter complete failure is it to you, because you are having judgments with yourselves. So you shouldn't have these problems. They ought to be resolved on a much lower level. And if they can't be resolved on the lowest level, then you know, take it to the poorest, the ones with the least amount of wisdom, and you'll get a better judgment, a better ruling than going to court. So it's a complete failure that you're having these judgments among yourselves. Wherefore, this is based on everything he said, why not rather be wronged? Wherefore, why not rather be cheated out of something? So his point here is take the loss, take the hit. Why in the world don't you take the hit on this? Why are you worried about it? Don't do this. Now, I stopped here because I don't have enough time, and I knew I wouldn't have enough time, because the third "don't you know" in verse 9 deals with the coming kingdom, and it's a reward passage. All right? So his point is going to be that no matter what the issue, take the loss, because no matter how much you lose, it's nothing compared to what you'll gain when Christ comes with his kingdom. So that's where he's going. But his point here is, man, so you got cheated, let the Lord deal with it. So you were wronged, let the Lord deal with it. And if you paid attention, which I know you do, if you paid attention to our songs, they all drove us to this point. Take the hit. Well, I'm really upset. I've been wrong. Casting all your cares upon him, for he careth for you. Well, that's just not good enough. Well, the Lord is the one who cares for us. The Lord is the one who loves us. Why not rather be cheated out of something? Why not rather be wronged? That's far better than being a Sioux City Sioux. Will you join me in prayer?